Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is David Ray Griffin. Griffin is a professor of philosophy of religion and theology emeritus at Claremont School of Theology and Claremont Graduate University in Claremont, California. He has published 36 books, mostly on philosophy and religion, with a focus on science and religion. 9 of his books concern 9/11, including The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11, and The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, which was a Publisher's Weekly Pick of the Week in November 2008. His most recent book is The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7, Why the Final Official Report About 9/11 is Unscientific and False. It was published this fall by Olive Branch Press. I'm speaking to David Ray Griffin by phone from his home in Central California. David Ray Griffin, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you again, Tish.
Now, let's talk about the final report came out in August 2008. This was supposed to be the definitive explanation for the collapse of all the World Trade Center buildings. The report came out through the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Tell us about this organization and why you think it's a non-scientific organization.
Well, I think it's non-scientific because of the product it produced. NIST is, as you say, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. That sounds pretty professional, pretty independent. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's an agency of the U.S. Department of Commerce. And that means during the whole period during which it was working on the report on the Twin Towers, which came out in 2005, and then the report on World Trade Center 7, which they kept delaying and delaying and delaying year after year after year, finally putting it out late in 2008. During all that period, it was an agency of the Bush-Cheney administration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And furthermore, we have the testimony of a former employee, a scientist who used to work for NIST, who has said that it has become totally politicized, and so that the scientists there have no independence whatsoever, that they're nothing, they're little more than hired guns, is his phrase. Mm-hmm. And I quote that in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Well, let's focus on World Trade Center Building 7 then. And it was a 47-story building, 82 steel columns, and it collapsed 7 hours after the other towers. In 6.5 seconds, it went down. Talk to us about this.
Well, yes, this is just extraordinary. And a funny thing here is that a lot of people who deride the 9/11 truth movement, including people on the left, like Alexander Coburn and George Monbiot, they've accused us of believing in magic.
Mm.
Well, actually, if you believe the visual theory about World Trade Center 7, you believe in magic, because 6.5 seconds is virtually the rate of free fall. Mm-hmm. That is, if you had dropped a brick off of the top of World Trade Center 7 at the same time the roofline started coming down, the roofline would have gotten to the ground almost as fast as the brick.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Over two seconds of that period, it was going not only at virtual free fall rate, what they call free fall acceleration, but absolute free fall. It was in absolute free fall for over 2 seconds. Now, this is what the 9/11 truth movement had been alleging for a long time. And NIST had kept saying, oh, no, 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 nothing close to free fall. No, 40% slower, you know, and all that. Well, finally, a high school physicist named David Chandler put it on YouTube, and he slowed it way down so everybody could see, measured it, and showed that for over 2 seconds, it was an absolute free fall. And he was able to get into a NIST meeting that was broadcast live and announced this. So they didn't have much choice. In the final report, then, what they did is they put out a preliminary report in August of 2008 for public comment.
Mm-hmm.
And then in November, put out the final report. And during that period, they changed. And they admitted that there was 2.25 seconds, 2.25 seconds of absolute free fall. The problem is that back in August, when they were still denying free fall, the leader of NIST, of this project, Sean Sunder, had explained why free fall would be impossible. As he said, you can't have free fall unless you have zero resistance. That would mean that all the concrete, all the steel, would be offering no resistance whatsoever to the roof, to the top floor as it came down, mm-hmm. and that would be impossible.
But the theory is that fires cause this, right, David? Let's make that clear to our listeners.
Yeah, the theory is that you had fires. Mm-hmm. They were only on 6 floors, according to NIST itself, that the fires lasted for any significant duration, only mm-hmm. 6 floors out of the 47. And some of these things that they call long-lasting lasted only about 40 minutes, and at most you had fires lasting maybe 3 hours, although they claimed that they were lasting for 7 hours.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do we have video of this building free falling? Is that how we're looking at this? Okay.
Yeah, and uh-huh. so I say if you just go on YouTube and look under David Chandler, Chandler, you know, World Trade Center 7. His latest video was called NIST Finally Admits Freefall. Mm. And that's the one where he lays it all out. The interesting thing is that in the preliminary report, the one that came out in August, they kept repeating, they would give their statements, and then they'd say, and this is consistent with physical principles. Another paragraph, and this is consistent with physical principles. In the final report, they deleted all of those statements, in effect admitting that what they were saying was not consistent with the laws of physics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so if you believe that report, you're believing in magic. You're believing that in miracles, that a miracle occurred, if a miracle is defined as something that violates generally inviolable laws of physics.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've heard that prior to 9/11, every total collapse of a steel-framed high-rise building was due to controlled demolition. I mean, if they admitted that it was free fall, aren't they admitting that it had to have been?
Well, implicitly they're admitting it, but they're not going to come out and say that because then the press might have to quote them. The press paid a lot of attention to that August meeting where Sunder had a big press conference. He came in and announced the mystery of Building 7 mm-hmm. has been mm-hmm. solved. And so the press had headlines, the mystery of Building 7 has been solved, and didn't look at the details. And when the November report came out, there was a huge silence from the press. Nobody in the press picked up the fact, even though I reported it in my book, and you would assume, you know, that maybe somebody in the press might have read the book. Nobody will report that NIST deleted all its references to being consistent with physical principles. They won't mention that NIST said, yeah, it fell at the free fall rate for over 2 seconds. They just don't discuss it. If they came out explicitly and said, yeah, we're affirming that basic laws of physics were violated, the press might feel like they had to quote that.
Mm-hmm. Well, NIST, the report also claims that no one could have placed explosives without being detected. Now that doesn't make sense either, considering that the Bush family had ties to the security firm in charge. To talk to us more about that.
Oh, yeah. The first half of my book deals with all the evidence that NIST overlooked that does show that explosives were used, and then their arguments for why explosives were not used and could not have been used. And this is one of them, that how would have they gotten in? Nobody could have done that without being detected. One thing they ignore is that nanothermite, which now scientists have found in the World Trade Center dust, and nanothermite is a high explosive, very different from ordinary thermite, which has been around for a long time. Nanothermite was just invented in the 90s, it looks like. It is very different from ordinary thermite and very powerful, but also doesn't have all the same effects as other explosives like RDX or TNT. And so they will argue, well, you know, if they'd used this much RDX, then all of this would have happened. Well, this didn't happen, therefore they didn't use explosives. The whole argument being circular, that if they used explosives, it would have had to be RDX, you know, and ignoring the existence of nanothermite, which they know about full well. They're deeply involved with nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm. But the Bush family did have ties to this security firm, right? Marvin Bush.
That's right.
And Bush's cousin, Wirt Walker, was the CEO, in fact, while they were doing security
right.
On
Bush's,
these buildings.
Bush's brother, Marvin, had been one of the principals up until the year 2000. And it was during the late 1990s that a lot of so-called renovation was done in the building, during which explosives could have been planted. Likewise, with Building 7, Silverstein had owned that building. So those explosives could have been placed in there any time over the past decades. And, you know, he had just recently taken out a lease on the Twin Towers, so he couldn't have been in charge of those, but with Building 7, certainly.
Have you come up with a reason why they would blow up Building 7 specifically?
Well, you know, our work is mainly focused on the official story's faults. And we need an investigation, and with a real investigation with subpoena power and threatening people with prison and all that, you could find out the answers to these questions easily enough. So I don't spend much time on it. Now, people have speculated on various reasons why they would have wanted Building 7 to go. Partly it just looks like there was a desire to get rid of the whole World Trade Center, sweep it clean and start from scratch. I mean, it wasn't only the three buildings that collapsed that were destroyed. All the buildings were destroyed one way or the other, and only those seven buildings. So that's just very coincidental that you've got buildings right across the street that are, you know, closer to one of the towers than the towers were to each other, and certainly closer than Building 7, which was across a street. And yet, just by coincidence, only those seven buildings went down, and a few other buildings were damaged, but none of them were completely destroyed or anything close to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the subtitle of your book is Official Report is Unscientific and False. Explain false to us.
Yeah, there is a distinction. Many people would assume, well, if it's unscientific, it's false, and if it's scientific, it's true. That's not necessarily true. A lot of work in philosophy of science has been done in the recent decades showing that certain studies in the past were fully scientific. They took account of the data. They were, you know, self-consistent. They were honest and all that. They just turned out to be wrong because there were certain data they didn't know about, certain facts that hadn't become data yet. Likewise, you could put out a report that was unscientific, or you cheated a lot like they do here. You made up evidence and you ignored a lot of evidence, but just happened to come out with basically the right answer. So there is a distinction, but in this case, as I show in the final chapter, to be unscientific, the way they were unscientific was also to produce a report that was false.
If you're just joining us, my guest is David Ray Griffin. We're talking about his recent book, The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7, Why the Final Official Report About 9/11 is Unscientific and False. Now you called the collapse of World Trade Center 7 the smoking gun. And yet, you know, even this late a date, no one is taking, you know, the wand from you. Why is it that none of the lefties on MSNBC, Oberman, Rachel Maddow, how come none of these people have taken this story? Do you think they believe the official report?
You know, you would have to ask them. I can't get inside their minds. I don't know what restraints they
But have you
operate
tried
under.
To, obviously, some of you from the 9/11 Truth Movement must have tried to get your story out to some of these people.
Oh, sure. We let them know that we exist and that there is a lot here that just, if it were examined, would be obviously false. But it's not the case that nobody is taking the wand. There is a group of scientists who are going to take my study and present it to the National Science Foundation, which, and in the book, I quote their statements. The book deals a lot with the question of scientific fraud, both in the technical sense and in a broader sense. And the National Science Foundation had put out a document and calling on people, saying these are the things that constitute scientific fraud. And if you know of scientific works that have violated these principles, let us know. So they're going to take this to the National Science Foundation. They're all going to also going to take it to the Union of Concerned Scientists, which has also been concerned with scientific fraud, particularly during the Bush administration. It had a huge petition in which thousands of scientists from around the world signed this petition saying the Bush administration had been guilty of using politicizing science for distorting science for political purposes.
We have heard a lot about that,
And so also, it'll go to the U.S. Department of Commerce, which does have an inspector general. And since the Commerce Department is above NIST, it would be a duty of theirs to look into this. Mm-hmm. So there are three possibilities there that this book could lead to something. Mm-hmm. And if it would lead to that, then you might find these left-leaning news shows and magazines paying some attention. So that's the route that may be the more fruitful way to go rather than trying to go directly to them.
I want to ask you this. So I read your first two books, the New Pearl Harbor and the New Pearl Harbor Revisited. Now, a lot of the material that's in the new book about World Trade Center 7 was in those books. But did you find anything? Did you uncover anything new when you wrote this current book?
Oh, an enormous amount, yeah. And in fact, in the New Pearl Harbor Revisited, which came out in 2008, it came out before, you know, I finally gave up waiting for this report. It was like waiting for Godot. Because, I mean, they literally had delayed it, you know, year after year, saying, oh, we'll do it next year, we'll do it next year, we'll do it next year. And so I finally put out the book and making a guess based on what they had said thus far about what they were going to say. And Popular Mechanics had already announced this is what they're going to say. Well, they were going to say, according to Popular Mechanics, that the diesel fuel in the building got set on fire, causing it to become a towering inferno, that there was an enormous structural damage caused by debris from when the North Tower collapsed, so that, according to Popular Mechanics, this was not going to be the first building in history brought down by fire alone. No, it wouldn't be fire alone. It would be fire plus structural damage, just like the Twin Towers that had structural damage from the planes plus the fire. And so that's what we all thought NIST was going to say, but lo and behold, they didn't. They said the diesel played no role, and they said the structural damage played no significant role. The building would have come down without it. Furthermore, yes, I went into great detail in this book, much more so than in the previous books, about the scientific evidence. I showed an enormous amount of evidence, even more than before, that NIST just had covered up, you know, the molten steel or molten iron, whatever it was. Anyway, steel had melted. You've got various kinds of particles in the World Trade Center dust that shouldn't be there, not just the nanothermite, but also just to have molten iron. Iron doesn't melt until 2800 degrees Fahrenheit, and the fires could not have been over 1800 degrees Fahrenheit. Even had melted molybdenum, which doesn't melt until 4000 some degrees Fahrenheit. And these reports were by this isn't, you know, what people like to write as truth or science. These were just written normal agencies, one of them being the U.S. Geological Survey. So you had a government agency that revealed the molybdenum had melted. That is, they revealed it under a Freedom of Information Act request from Stephen Jones. And so there's an enormous amount of evidence there about the physical stuff. And then I went through in the second part of the book to show in detail their theory, their fire theory of how the building came down by what they call thermal expansion. You got a beam that expanded horizontally and therefore knocked column 79 off its perch, and then that caused all hell to break loose. That started a chain reaction, and all 82 columns came down.
At once,
they just
right?
have to cheat and cheat and cheat and fabricate. For example, I mean, I show that they just lie. They say things that they contradict what they had said in their interim report back, which came out in 2004 or 5, whatever that was.
2005, I think, yeah.
Yeah, for example, they tell us there was a, they show a graphic showing a raging fire on floor 12, which was one of the crucial floors, according to their theory, at 5 o'clock. And so you would infer that that raging fire kept going till 5:21 when the building came down. Well, you look back at their interim report, and here's what you see: a building with a fire hardly anywhere, and the caption in the picture says, "The fire on all fires on floor 12 had burned out by 4:45." Mm. I mean, it's just beyond belief. They tell another lie, enormous lie. The theory is about the girders, and they claim that the girders were not attached to the floor slabs by means of these enormous screws. I'm forgetting the technical term right now. I've been dealing with other things for several weeks here. And anyway, they claim that's why the girders slipped off and therefore allowed the beam to expand, and that, you know, led to all the collapse. And you look back, shear studs, that's the term I'm looking for. They said the girders were not connected to the floor slabs with shear studs. Well, you look back at their interim report, and here's what you read. The floor beams and the girders were connected to the floor slabs with shear studs. Now, these were enormous studs or screws or bolts, 28 of them. So it made a big difference whether or not they were there. And they just they almost quoted that passage word for word, except they deleted the word girders and then explicitly said, and the girders were not attached with shear studs. So that's the kind of, you know, when you're talking about scientific fraud, that's a pure example there, just lying about the data.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any hope now that we have a new president who has said that he was going to restore science to its rightful place, that we will see President Obama or any member of his administration wanting to pursue these questions?
Well, let's say we have not completely given up hope. We have not yet been shown any any signs to be encouraged. We've heard the mantra over and over again, we're going to look forward, not backward. But, of course, many people are pointing out that to look forward in an intelligent way, you quite often have to look backward to see what went wrong, to see what lies were told, and so on. So we're hoping that as the scientific community gets behind this report which is happening more and more and more. We've got now a dozen professional 9/11 organizations. You know, we originally had pilots and veterans, back in 2005 and 2006, but now we've got medical professionals, religious leaders, political leaders, intelligence officers. Architects and Engineers now has about 1,000 licensed members. We've got firefighters for 9/11 Truth, and so on. And we've got, you know, growing groups in Europe and Australia and New Zealand and Japan. So it's become a worldwide professionalized movement. Mm-hmm. And so if we can get the combined effects of these professionals from all around the world and figure out a way to give voice to that, then we might be able to bring something about.
Mm-hmm. And so you obviously believe that this was an inside job and it was the Bush administration.
Yeah. There's just no question about it. When, the more you study the evidence, the more clear it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've given people your books, and everybody who reads them says the same thing, that we need a new investigation. We need a new investigation. Yeah.
By the way, a big event happened the other night, which has not been seen yet in the United States.
David, we only have about 2 minutes left, so go ahead.
Okay, this is it. The CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, put out a show on its Fifth Estate program that actually, for the first time, revealed quite a bit of 9/11 truth on a mainstream television station. And you can go on the website to comment. You can't see it from the United States, but there is a YouTube video that's available. So if you look around, you'll be able to see this show. It's called The Unofficial Story. I believe that's the name of the show. But it's a Fifth Estate, CBC. People should be able to find it. And, for example, I was able to reveal there, and they showed the graphic, that the alleged phone calls from Barbara Olson, that the FBI now says those calls did not happen.
Yes, the calls from the plane, that the technology was not there for it to reach the ground at that point, right?
Yeah, that's what we had been saying, and now the FBI has agreed with us and has said that this is the way they describe Barbara Olson's, you know, Ted Olson said, I got two calls, each lasted a minute. The FBI says she attempted one call, it didn't go through, it was unconnected, and therefore it lasted 0 seconds.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, David, we're almost out of time. Can you give some contact information in case people want to get in touch with you?
I don't have a website, but there's a guy who runs a website in my name, and it's called davidraygriffin.com. And so if they write there, it'll probably get to me.
Okay, great. Well, David Ray Griffin, thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the good work. I know you're not going to stop the pressure, and we hope that something will come of this in the future.
Okay, Tish, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.